We talked about this morning in the adult class, about practicing our faith and the importance of it. This lesson is very similar to probably two, or at least two, maybe three other lessons that I've done in some respects. But as I've been trying to deal with looking at Scripture, looking at messages, and looking at how we are to try to maybe take an evaluation of ourselves, is to try a little bit different spin on this. One of my favorite things about mobile phones these days is the fact that they can do panoramic shots, and it seems like every time they come out with a cool way of doing photography, there's a new way to do it. I've been noticing on Facebook lately that people keep posting images that not only do they have the picture, but you can also scan at will to see what they did. And this is one of the shots of the practice that my son's baseball team is on. They're called the Dragons. I'm an assistant manager with the team. Been assistant manager for about 3 years, and I'm basically the chore boy of the team, but that's okay because I'm not a fantastic baseball player, so it's not a big deal. But a lot of the context of our message today is going to be involving sports, and I was hoping to see Debbie's grandson, Brady, here today because he would be able to catch a lot of these guys. I don't know if you've ever been able to tax his brain on sports players and teams, but that boy is like an encyclopedia. Anybody that you want to talk to, every team I've ever tried to quiz him on, whether football, hockey, baseball, I think he tries to stay away from basketball, but I think that's personal preference. But he knows usually the lineups, he knows who's been added, who's been taken away, what their averages are. Just an amazing kid. And he's practicing his knowledge of what he loves, and he likes baseball and he likes hockey a lot. So what are we talking about today? First of all, what is practice? Because we have a lot of times that somebody presents a lesson from the podium, or somebody presents a lesson in class, or we talk about these things, and we say, we need to do this, we need to do that, and everybody says, yeah, that's true, I'm going to work on it, but I don't do a good job, so don't push me too far, I'm really not comfortable with that, how well are you doing? There's a lot of things that go through our mind when we're kind of thinking about how we apply our spirituality in life, because it's important to us. It's very important to the people around us, and God and Christ certainly hold importance to it too. So, as has kind of been a tradition for a lot of the lessons that we do here, among a number of those that present, are just starting from the very beginning. What is practice? And it's always interesting going back and looking at how people define things. The word practice, in this case, from the definition that I pulled off online, there's two different ways you can use that, a noun and a verb, and I'm not going to get into grammar and go back to English class because a lot of people didn't really care too much for that. But the first definition of practice is the actual application or use of an idea, belief, or method as opposed to theories about such applications or use. And I love that because practice, we can talk about doing a lot of things, but until we put it in practice, you hear people say that so often. Well, let's just put this in practice. If you're in a business or an organization, a lot of times people say that, yeah, you've been talking about these ideas, but you've never done them. Maybe we have a boss, and they say, oh, we're going to do this with our company, and it's going to be great. I was with a friend of mine that I hadn't seen in a while yesterday, and we were golfing, and he's a CPA, and he was saying, you know, a year ago, I was telling the people that I work for that we need to do this, and they just totally ignored me, and they almost chastised him for the ideas until recently, and they realized the impact of what he was saying. They said, we need to instigate these or implement these ideas, and they're a great idea, and everybody's like, yeah, and Brian's like, well, that's what I tried to bring to your attention. They didn't apply those things, and so they didn't practice those things. He had an idea that it was going to be sound, and just like this definition says, they basically only saw that as a theory. Brian's idea, it was something that might work. And that's all he did with it. Even in Brian's case, he thought it was going to be a fine idea, but it was still theoretical. He understood how it could work out, but until it was put into practice, it was of no use. Now spin this around a little bit on this definition about practicing our faith. That is actually applying our faith. Not just talking about the idea, the belief, the method, and the theory of our faith, but actually doing it in such a way that it's practiced. It's visible to others, it's visible to us, and it's visible to God. The second definition, repeated exercise in or performance of an activity or skill so as to acquire or maintain proficiency in it. And that is what basically that picture in the background of these kids are. Every team that we may have been a part of when we were young, or maybe some of you are today in different teams, is about doing something so repetitively that you become very easily adapted to it. And I talked about this before in another lesson, a very similar context, but you want to get to the point where something happens, you react to it instantly, and you don't have to think about it, and you do what you're supposed to correctly. I think a parent that's got a child, when they first are born, they're slow reacting to everything that happens. But then after you've had a couple kids, you can see things about to happen just because of the situation. Skipping down to the verb, perform an activity or exercise a skill repeatedly or regularly in order to improve or maintain one's proficiency. How do you become proficient in something? Well, you do it over and over again. And also carry out or perform habitually or regularly. So practitioner. We think of practitioners, and sometimes we don't associate it with the word practice. The definition by Merriam-Webster is a person who works in a profession, a professional medical or legal business. That's not saying a business that is legal. That is actually about doing legal work. A person who regularly does an activity that requires skill or practice. And so a practitioner, or somebody, if you go to a doctor's practice, or they have a practice of their own, is the place where they perform things over and over and over. And that's what you want from a doctor. You don't want a doctor that's what we use the word today is a newbie, somebody that's just doing something for the first time. You want somebody that's actually got skill and somebody that understands what they're doing. Again, spin that around to our faith. We want to be practitioners of our faith. Every one of us should have a practice of our own. Our house, if possible, should be the practice of our faith. When people want to know, hey, does Roger, how does he behave? Whether I have a sign on the door that says this is the practice of Roger Starnes Jr., that is just what it is. And when people think of me, they're going to label in their minds the behaviors that they see, the attributes of my life in one way or another. Are they going to think of me, hey, if I go over to Roger's practice, he's a very spiritual man. He's God-focused. Everything about him is going to be involving God. Or do they say, he goes to church, but I don't know much more about him than that. You don't want to go to a doctor like that, and you wouldn't want to be a practitioner like that either. So I'm throwing a bunch of things up here. These are some points that I wrote down when I was preparing for the lesson, and it seemed like it worked best just to list them all. So practice points. If we're practicing our faith, what are some points that we can keep in mind? Well, first of all, to practice, and going back to that idea of the kids on the baseball field or whatever other sports you might be thinking of, you actually have to do something. You're not practicing if you're sitting on the bench. You're not practicing if you're at home. You're not practicing if you're out doing something that has nothing to do with a team. You're only practicing if you're doing something for the team, with the team, and part of it. And that, again, spinning it around to the spiritual side, we are practicing our faith if we're actually doing it. We can't talk about it. We have to actually do it. And these lessons are for me first and then for you all. So keep that in mind. Second practice point. To grow, you have to like it. Now, that sounds like an easy thing to kind of dismiss, but you can see, I've been an assistant manager for a long time, I can tell the kids that are going to do well before they play at all, and I can tell the kids that are not going to do well all year. Sometimes, other kids doing well affects the kids that really don't have an interest in it, and they perform better. And that's part of what a team is all about. But to grow, you have to like it. You can't go into it every time that you go to practice, I hate practice, which happens to James a lot. He does that quite often. I don't want to do that. I want to stay at home in the air conditioning. I don't want to go out in the sun. I hate the uniform. There's a lot of things that come up, and I can get away with that today because he's not here. So he'll have to get online and listen to it. Third, it takes the right equipment. I can get a lot of kids out there, and again, baseball team, if they don't have a glove on, they are not going to be useful to me. If they don't have cleats on, I don't know how many of you ever tried to run fast around a baseball field with tennis shoes on, but you will probably go down quickly. I've done it because sometimes I'm just wearing my tennis shoes. As a coach, I don't run a lot, but sometimes I get out there with the kids and try to help them out. And just like the cartoons, I'll just stand in one place and my feet will keep going and I won't go anywhere. Number four, you have to know what you're doing. I can't put a kid out into the field and say, hey, you're going to be my pitcher. And he's like, I've never pitched before. They have to know what they're doing. They have to know what their role is. An outfielder knows that they have to cover ground. They need to understand how to get back when the ball's hit up. I mean, the kids the age that James is on the team right now have a lot of learning. But by the time that they're high school or maybe college, if they stick with it that long, they will have practiced this sport to the point where they understand what to do. Again, practicing our faith is the same way. And fifth, do it when it is not needed. The best players, the best people in the business, the best people in any profession do what they do when it's not required of them. They want to learn more about it. They keep practicing it. You see kids at home shooting baskets at home when they're a basketball player. Well, that's going to make them better. You see kids at home. I see one of the most popular things now for baseball is you hook these baseballs up that have these cords onto them on the pole, and you hit it, and it wraps around, and it unwinds, and you hit it again. Nobody has to be there but you and the baseball. It's just over and over, repetitive tasks. So those are our practice points. Now, what is our practice frame of mind? To make anything happen, you have to get it into your brain, how am I going to accomplish this task? So again, number one, I have, why am I doing this? Why, if I'm a baseball player, why am I there? Is it because mom and dad told me to? Well, hopefully not. Hopefully we are not practicing our faith because mom and dad told me to. Sometimes it starts out that way, but what we want to get to is we want to be part of a faithful church. We want to please God, and we want to be found faithful by Him. Second, what do I get out of it? If you're trying to go out, we've talked about this. I think Abe's done some really good lessons on this. If your mission to go to church is to have everybody give you hugs and say hi to you and make you feel good so you can get back out of there, that you're not on the right team. I guess I could say it that way. If we're doing it because we're trying to bring happiness to others, we're trying to bring encouragement and exhortation to others, and we're trying to show them that we are trying to be pleasing to God, then we're going to be in a better state. Number three, what could I be doing? Or what else could I be doing? If our frame of mind is practicing our faith, what other options do we have? And sometimes those other options really appeal to our senses, don't they? I could sit at home and stay in the air conditioner and prop my feet up and watch a good TV show. That sounds pretty enjoyable. But what is it going to do for me long term? And number four, is it worth it? So, I really like this book. I've read most of this book. It's a pretty long one. And it seems like that's the wrong slide. No, I think it is the wrong slide. But anyhow, just a second. Because I think I am missing a slide and it's not going to give you the right information here. Maybe I just got it backwards. Nope, must have deleted it. Okay. The book Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, I'm just reading this from my notes, says that it takes roughly 10,000 hours of practice to achieve mastery in a field. Now, that's not meaning you're just trying to get good at it. This means absolutely mastery. I think Kyle's used this before. I know he liked these kind of books. So they're very motivational. So it says, how does Gladwell arrive at this conclusion? And if the conclusion is true, how can we leverage this idea to achieve greatness in our professions, or in this case, in our faith? In 1960, while they were still an unknown high school rock band, the Beatles went to Hamburg, Germany to play in local clubs. Now we get to the slide that you got up there. So I've got a very, very old picture of three of the Beatles. I think even before Ringo was part of the band. You can make your own assumptions about rock bands and such like that. But I really like this story because so many people know who these guys are. And it continues on. The group was underpaid. So these young men are just out of high school. They're wanting to play music. They're going to these clubs to play. And it says they were underpaid. The acoustics were terrible. The audiences were unappreciative. I've read about this, that sometimes they would boo them constantly because they just felt like they were so bad. And it's the question there is, so what did the Beatles get out of this Hamburg experience? Hours of playing time. Non-stop hours of playing time that forced them to get better. And notice that, forced them to get better. As the Beatles grew in skill, audiences demanded more performances. More playing time, and by 1962, remember this was from 1960 to 62, they were doing this almost non-stop. They were playing 8 hours per night. Imagine a concert that lasts that long. And 7 nights a week. Just imagine that schedule. They were really invested in getting better and playing here. By 1964, which is the year everybody thinks about the Beatles, the year they burst on the international scene, the Beatles had played over 1,200 concerts together. And again, 7 days a week, 8 hours a night. Just imagine that. By way of comparison, most bands today don't play 1,200 times in their entire career. So, spin this around to our faith. If you really want to be good and proficient at your faith, it takes time. Now, I can't ask all of you to spend 10,000 hours at it. I can't ask you to spend 8 hours a day, 7 days a week working on your faith, but just think of what you could accomplish if you did that. a perfect example. We talked about this in class today. Why was Christ always going to his disciples, asking them to do things a certain way? Why were they always in his company? Well, they basically were doing exactly what this book talked about. They had invested all their time and application to be able to practice something that was super important for the world. I wanted to look back in my Bible and see exactly what practicing had to say in the Bible. And so I searched for the word practicing, and I was expecting to find a whole bunch of positive things, because I could remember what I see at the bottom there, practicing righteousness. Three times that's mentioned in 1 John, chapter 2, 29, 3, 7, and 3, 10. And that was the first thing in my mind. Like, I bet the Bible is chocked full of practicing good things, because that's what God wants us to do, right? Well, that's not true. When you go back to the Bible, everything in blue is basically a negative. And those are the things that people do by default. So that's just to illustrate how the tendencies of people are and what they practice. And I'll not get all these passages because we'll take too much time on that. But coveting, practicing deceit, mentioned one time. Four times, divination is practiced by people and it's warned against. Evil is practiced. Judging is practiced. Lawlessness is practiced. Lewdness, lying, magic, soothsaying, sorcery, ungodliness, untruth, wicked works, witchcraft. You go through the Bible, and again, this is just the list that I got. I think there was a total of like 39 instances, three of which were those that were actually positive, that were practicing righteousness from 1 John, but the rest of those were negatives. So again, this is just to illustrate the tendencies of a human being is to practice things that's easy for them, things that bring them benefit, things that make them feel comfortable, or things that may elevate them into a stature. And we probably know most of these passages just looking at what's being talked about. So, I'm going to go back through Matthew 6. This comes up a lot in my lessons. If you've seen it too many times, I apologize. But again, I want to spin this just a little bit differently than what we've done in the past. We're talking about practicing our faith. Think about teams in baseball. So, seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Oops. Matthew 7, 7 through 8. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone that asks, receive. I think we've read these things many times, but look at the words that I have underlined there. How can you practice from Matthew 6:33? You seek. You seek. You seek. You seek. When you hear something that doesn't sound right, find the answer. When you're not sure about what to do in a situation, find the answer. When you have a difficulty, you're struggling, you need to get out of it, find the way to get out of that. You have to do something. Remember what I said about a baseball team. The very first thing in practice, you have to do something. So, seeking is very important. Matthew 7, ask, seek, knock. Those things, again, are applications, as we go back to our definitions, of practicing our faith. I can practice my faith and not do any of these things, and it will not be given to me. It will not be found. It will not be open to me. So we can turn negatives to all these things if we fail to do what practicing is talking about. 1 Corinthians 10:24, again, seeking. Let no one seek his own, but each one another's well-being. Colossians 3:1, again, seeking over and over and over again. Sometimes we're seeking more information from God's Word. Sometimes we're seeking to accomplish those things. Sometimes we're seeking others to try to help them out. And again, the chapter about faith. Without faith, it is impossible to please Him. So what's the practice part of that? Well, faith. That's what this whole lesson is about, practicing our faith. And it says it is impossible to please Him if we don't have it. So why is it important to practice faith? Well, that's the only way that we can please God. For he who comes to God must believe that He is. Again, we talked about this in class today too with Cody and the adult class. The man came up there and he says, well, I kind of believe. Lord, help my belief. Well, why was that important to him? Because that was the criteria for Christ helping him. It wasn't Jesus in that instance didn't say, well, you seem like a really a caring father. You really like your son. So because of that, I'm going to go ahead and heal your son of this demon that he has. He could have said, well, your son's really been suffering. I'm going to go ahead and heal him because your son just, he shouldn't have to deal with this. This is not good for a kid. No, what his focus was faith. Is your faith good enough that I can do this for you? And that's what he decided to take care of him. So practicing our faith, and I'm going to make sure I didn't skip anything else in my lesson here. Okay, I did. I don't know why my PowerPoint's not working here. Going back to what I was talking about with Brady earlier, when I was doing those practice points on there earlier, I also had some images down below, and I wanted to look at some sports people that we might look up to. Right now, as of yesterday, the number one player in all of baseball is Josh Donaldson. And I knew Brady would be back there smiling because he'd have all these stats and I wouldn't have to ask him. He has a .300 batting average, 23 home runs, 64 RBIs, and his on-base percentage is .416. What about football? I know we're kind of out of the football season. J.J. Watt is the number one football player rated in the NFL. I'm not going to deal with all the stats there, but I think everybody that likes NFL probably knows who he is. What about hockey? Sidney Crosby is the number one player in hockey. Again, 36 goals, 49 assists, and I can't read the... looks like 85 points that he's been able to accumulate. And then I went ahead and put this one down because I knew it would be important to Mike, Glendon, and Abe. Brad Keselowski is number one in NASCAR. So we've got Josh Donaldson for the Toronto Blue Jays for baseball, J.G. Watt for the Houston Texans, Sidney Crosby for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and Brad Keselowski racing for Team Penske Racing. Those are all number one people. And the reason I had them down there for those practice points was to illustrate the importance of the very things we talked about. You have to do something. You have to like it. It takes the right equipment. You have to know what you're doing. And you have to do it when it is not needed. I'm very disappointed that my PowerPoint's not cooperating on here because I had some other things on here too. Practicing our faith. One of the things that I was looking at too is some quotes that people had online that I thought were interesting. And Richard Carlson, I don't know who all these people are, so you'll have to give me a little bit of liberty here just to say who the person is, but I wanted to focus on the quotes. Richard Carlson says, "You are what you practice most." And that is absolutely true. That's the type of people that we are. That's how we act. If you practice acting a certain way all the time, that's the person that you are. If you're a very dedicated Christian, people will recognize that as a dedicated Christian. If you're a person that really likes sports, they're going to recognize you as a person that really likes sports. If you're a person that sits around and does nothing all the time, they'll recognize that too. Ernst Schumacher says, "An ounce of practice is generally worth a ton of theory." I was trying to take out all the things that we hear so often about practice and focus in on some other things, but I thought these were interesting. I'm not even going to pronounce this guy's name. I think it's difficult even for me to say, but his last name's Gwynn. And it says, "Behind every one of Michael Jordan's heart-stopping, buzzer-beating, spine-scintillating, game-winning shots lies the corpse of 1,000 missed childhood driveway shots." And I had a picture of one of the most famous pictures of Michael Jordan, 6 seconds to go, winning basically the tournament for the Bulls when he was playing. It's almost getting old now for a lot of younger people talking about the Bulls and Michael Jordan, but most people still hold him in very high esteem. But it's the truth to that quote is fantastic because it just says he didn't just come up one day. I mean, he was gifted, but again, it goes back to what you like. You have to do something. To grow, you have to like it. And those are the two most important things. The kids that excel in sports are the kids that like to do something. They spend time doing it. Last quote for you from Robert Jordan says, "What you practice too often, you use without thinking." And I like that quote because it sounds like a negative, but it's actually the truth. Again, going back to that idea, if you do something so repetitively that you don't have to think about it, you're in better shape. Now, back to what we've got on the board here. 1 Peter 5:8 says, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour." We've talked about that so many times, it probably almost bores you to even hear it talked about because it's just one of the things that we bring up in class. It's one of the things we bring up in sermons. But the importance of it is so integral to us being Christians. Why do we practice our faith? Well, because we always want to be paying attention to this very subject right here. And as you can see, that zebra is probably not going to be in good shape very soon. I was trying not to put any pictures on there that might traumatize any kids or anything like that. But where do lions typically go? How many times have you watched a program about nature and there's just thousands of different, maybe antelope, maybe zebras, it could be all these different animals. Where do the lions always get their food from? Don't they pick them off at the back of the pack? Roll that into this idea about practicing our faith. if we're always trying to do the best we can, if we're always trying to make sure that we're fully clued in on what needs done, we are not going to be at the back of the pack. Now, this zebra that is here, again, probably didn't have a good outcome. But if he was practicing, maybe he wasn't the fastest. He or she wasn't the fastest zebra there was. But if they're practicing wisdom, if they're practicing behaviors that are incumbent on an animal's survival, wouldn't you tend to be in the front of a big herd of animals? I'm not the fastest runner. I know a lot of kids that are in sports that are lighter than me, that are faster than me. Sometimes I go to these runs, and I've done a couple, I think three times I've done a half marathon. I don't finish in the front at all. The best time I think I've ever done, I think I've usually been 2 hours, 50-some minutes, something like that. It takes me that long to run 13 miles after a full summer of practice. There are people that can do that whole race in around 45 minutes, 13 miles in 45 minutes. It's just insane. Their training is all about practicing. But, again, I want to look at this particular picture that you see up there right now, because practicing doesn't mean being the best. It involves what I just talked about. It involves doing your best, not anybody else's best, your best, using wisdom, looking for signs of danger, and always being on guard. Again, this could be the slowest zebra in that entire herd, but if it was in the front, if it was watching out for lions, and when everybody started moving, it went to, the safety of that animal would have been preserved. Got some lengthy reading here, so bear with me. 1 Corinthians 12 through 31. For as the body is one, again, I've talked about this passage many times. I've brought it up a lot of times in class. I brought it up a lot of times in lessons. But again, think about the subject we're talking about. The body is one and has many members, but all members of that one body, being many, are one body. I've tried to underline words in here that involve action, that involve practice. The body is one. That means the body has to come together. Again, going back to those things I pointed out. You have to do something. You have to like it. It takes the right equipment. Being many are one body. The body, it sounds weird, but we are a body because we come together. For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body, whether Jew or Greek, whether slave or free, and all have been made to drink into one Spirit. For in fact, the body is not one member, but many. Again, this idea of baptism, I was thinking about this because we talk about this a lot at church and a lot of people dismiss it and think it's unimportant. How many people are like me that have a child, maybe a grandchild, that wants to play a sport? You have to fill out the paperwork. You have to go to a destination, a school or something like that. The child has to come with you. You have to put down your name. You have to pay money. You have to do a lot of things just to say, my son or my daughter is going to be participating in this sport. Then you have to buy equipment, you have to make time and make sure that they get to practices, make sure that they get to whatever the coach has in store for them. And then people look at baptism like, why, that is so stupid. Why can't we just believe? Why can't we just pray and just be done with it? Well, if you have to go through steps to show your membership and affiliation in a sports team, why would you not show your membership and affiliation in Christ Church? And that's not a liberty to us. That's not something I'm saying to you. You guys think that's a good idea? No. Christ said that's what it takes. Paul said that's what it takes. Peter said that's what it takes. All those that are mentioned in the New Testament, adding people to the church, said this is what it takes. When Christ said, this is what I need you to do, and I want you to teach it to all these other people, we continue that. Continuing on. If the foot should say, because I am not the hand, I am not of the body, is it not therefore not of the body? Talks about the ear and the eye. Going down, it says, okay, well, if the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole were hearing, where would the smelling be? And I want to turn this around and talk about the sports teams again. If the whole team were a bunch of pitchers and you needed some good fielders out there, how good would that be? If the whole team was catchers, how good would they be? If the whole team were right fielders, how good would the team be? It's very important that everybody plays their part. Everybody has a role to play. Outfielders in a very good performing team, and I'm probably running out of time really fast. Outfielders have to be able to cover a lot of ground, and they have to be able to have a good glove, and they have to be able to throw well. Those are the criteria for outfielders. Infielders have to be able to react quickly, have good gloves, and be able to throw on target. Pitchers have to be able to throw in a spot that's about this big over and over and over again. Catchers have to stop those all the time. So all those things are very important. Why then, when we look at the church, do we not say all these levels of importance are out there? I'll try to cut through here real quick. We talk about here, there are many members. Some are weaker, but are still necessary. And I talked about that, just like the zebra. It may not be in the front, or it's getting caught by that lion because it's a straggler in the back. It has nothing to do with its ability. It has a lot to do with its situational awareness. It failed there. Sometimes weaker members need to be more situationally aware than others. And then also, we're talking about greater modesty and so on. Down at the bottom, and if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. I love baseball. It cracks me up sometimes. Hockey probably too. Basketball maybe not so much. But you can get to the end of the championship game. Those guys all run together and they're lifting each other up and hugging each other. And I always worry that they're getting trampled or something underneath that big pile there. But they're celebrating. Just like it says here, one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. It might have been one catch. It might have been amazing pitching. It might have been perfect hitting by the team. But the whole team's success is dependent on that. We are the body of Christ, the members individually, and God has appointed these in the church. Apostles, prophets, teachers, helpers. I underline that because that's what a lot of us are, is helpers. Administrations and other things that were part of the early church. And ask the question, are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers, are all workers of miracles? Do all speak with tongues? Do all interpret? That's probably not true. Certainly on the spiritual gifts, those have gone. But the final thing there, earnestly desire the best gifts. And how do you show earnestly desiring? You're working forward towards them. Strive to enter the narrow gate. We talked about these things too. Depart from me. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. I love that statement down there. You yourselves will be thrust out. So why are, again, is this important for us practicing our faith? Well, because it's not easy to get into. It's difficult. So going back to that field of kids there and going back to this zebra being chased by a lion, that's what it all boils down to. Why do we practice our faith? Well, these things are risks, they're dangers, and they're out there for us to always be aware of.